Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Slam and Jam here on the Athletic NBA Show. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and you can get The Athletic for a discounted rate. It's a great time to have The Athletic with the playoffs in full swing. I honestly have a hard time keeping up with everything because there's so much going on. But if you go to theathletic.com, boy, you can catch up on everything just in a quick little 20-minute read. So go check it out today. Fred Katz had a great piece today, who's on the show with me, about the Knicks-Sixers game. It's a very, very fun read, so go check that out today at theathletic.com/NBA show. Before I get to Fred, I want to get to the BetMGM line of the week, brought to you by BetMGM. I'm looking at Clippers-Mavs tonight. The Mavs are favored by 4.5 points. Back in Dallas. I look for the Clippers to bounce back in a big way in that one. I like the odds for the Clips tonight. With me, as always during the playoffs, is my guy Fred Katz. Fred, what's up, man?
Oh, nothing. Just, you know, covering a series where apparently the referees are now the main characters instead of the players. You know, it is normal stuff.
It has been bizarre, I would say. I would say it's been very bizarre. And I honestly hate talking about the officials. I don't know if you feel this way, but that's one of my least favorite things to talk about on a podcast. But the officials demand it in this series. They demand to be spoken about in these three games that have been ridiculous. And I'm sure that you see this in your mentions and all over the place, but I'm sure Knicks fans are on fire this morning, like angry.
Knicks fans are on fire. Sixers fans are on fire. Joel Embiid's jumper's on fire. Everybody's on fire. That's exactly. Did we really think that New York sports fans and Philadelphia sports fans,
boy,
were going to come out of this thing both just emotionally stable? Did we really think there was anything more than a 0% possibility, man, of that happening?
Our guy Jonathan Macri is even like taking like a turn that I never thought that he would, like changing his profile to like this like FMB thing, which I understand. And so what we're going to do today, we're going to go through different categories of players in an effort to talk about as many different teams as we can. But we are going to give the best offensive player so far, the best defensive player so far in the playoffs, best role player, and the most disappointing player. Let's start with the best offensive player. I'm going to go with the guy that Jonathan Macri just wished didn't exist. It's Joel Embiid, who is 37.7 points per game, 8.7 boards, 5.3 rebounds, had an insane third quarter last night, 18 points, made all of his threes. There's really not much that you could do with him. And I'm sure that the entire time Knicks fans are just thinking, this guy shouldn't even be in the game, and he's absolutely murdering us. He's been really good, and he's been dealing, obviously, with the issue with his knee. He's been dealing with the issues with Bell's palsy as well. I mean, what the list of things that Joel Embiid has suffered in the playoffs has gotten a little ridiculous. And I feel so bad for him with the Bell's palsy thing. And I think now we know that when he's putting his head down in those interviews, why? You know, because it looked like he was just like really sad, and he probably was. But it's also like he doesn't want his face on the screen. I've had friends that have had Bell's palsy. My uncle's had Bell's palsy. It's not fun. It's terrible. But anyways, I think Embiid has been, to me, the best offensive player in the playoffs so far.
I think that's fair. I'm glad you took Joel Embiid, because I when I get my pick, I'm going to take somebody who I would have had number one.
Yeah.
Look, he just dropped 50 points on 19 shots. And for all the conversation about officiating, for all the conversation about if he should have been in that game to begin with, which I think is valid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason, for those who didn't see the game, the reason why we're having the conversation is because he came out in that game. And the only energy I can really think to compare his energy at the beginning of game 3-2, and the Sixers go in, they're down 2-0. He had just said that they were going to win the series after they lost game 2. And the way he said it, it didn't come off as like some sort of braggadocious Rip Hamilton level guarantee.
Yeah.
It came off almost like how you'll go through mental health exercises with your therapist.
Yeah.
And you're just like, nope, reinforce positive thoughts. Listen. Reinforce positive thoughts. It's like, nope, we're gonna win the series.
We're gonna win.
That's what I'm telling you. We're gonna win the series. Gonna win the series. And that's how it came off. I didn't think of it as this sort of braggadocious thing. You read the quote and it seems that way. And then you look at it and you're like, no, this is just a dude who's trying to reassure himself of what's happening. And he comes out in game 3. And the only energy I could really think to compare it to was Dwight Howard in game 4 of the Lakers first round series in 2013. When they have this team, that's the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash Lakers team.
What a reference. Okay, keep going.
Do you know what I'm getting at?
I do, yeah, keep going, yeah.
And they're supposed to be awesome, and said they win 45 games and they get a low playoff seed, and they're playing the Spurs and they're just getting waxed by the Spurs. Dwight Howard comes into that game 4 with one mission. And he's like, I, tonight, am going to get ejected.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And I felt very similar about Embiid, because he had the flagrant on Mitchell Robinson, which I thought very easily could have been a flagrant 2. Because you just, if that's not a flagrant 2, I don't know kind of what is a flagrant 2. He grabbed a dude by the ankles when he was on the floor and tackled him to the ground.
Yeah.
Guy just had ankle surgery.
In the replay center, they said it was unanimous flagrant 1. Okay, I'll ask this question. Do you believe that this would have been a flagrant 1 had they not even released the last 2-minute report from the previous game? Like, let's just say that was not a practice that existed. Would it have been more probable that he was ejected in this game?
Well, do the Sixers still have their grievance as well? Can you imagine if Joel Embiid got ejected in the first quarter of the game following the grievance? Here's the thing. I think it probably wouldn't have been a flagrant 2 regardless.
Okay.
I think when a team is down 0-2, that's a situation where you know, people talk about, oh, the refs are taking it into their hands. The refs are the one deciding the series. That shouldn't be it. This is one of those situations where if they called a flagrant 2 and they ejected Embiid and the Sixers go on and lose that game and they're down 3-0 and the series is basically over because no team has ever come back from down 3-0.
Yeah.
Like, then I think we're talking about, oh, the officials took the game out of the 76ers' hands.
Yeah.
And they could have just called it a flagrant 1. So I think they're in kind of a can't win situation there.
Yeah.
That being said, I think what's pretty clear is that everything that happened in and after game 2, from the final couple of minutes when officials missed a couple of fouls on Tyrese Maxey, which could have secured the game for the Sixers. And then obviously the Sixers' grievance, like, that was listened to.
Yeah.
Embiid was unbelievable in that game. He was dropping every single jumper imaginable. 10 of his 13 makes were outside of the paint. was just all jumpers, but it was also all free throws.
Yeah.
He got to the line more times than all the Knicks combined.
Yeah. He has somehow been able to be one of the players where the fouling and getting to the free throw line hasn't affected him throughout this playoffs, where it's affected a lot of other guys. I mean, I've been at all two Thunder games so far, and like Shea can't get to the line right now, and he's playing against a really physical Pelicans defense. But Embiid has been able to bypass that somehow, where he's still able to get to the free throw line. And it's part of that's him. Like, he knows how to sell a call. He knows how to get fouled. He knows how to get to the free throw line. He's been great, you know. And the free throws are part of the story of like why I think he's been the best offensive player.
Oh. Yeah, a massive part of it. You know, it's funny because on one side, you've got the Sixers filing a grievance saying they can't get any calls. On the other side, you've got the Knicks saying, well, they can't make any calls on the Sixers because they're not giving Jalen Brunson any calls.
Yeah.
And they know if they're not giving Brunson calls, they have to not give other people calls. And then you're like, let me see what's going on here. You're like, I wonder of every single player who's played in the playoffs so far, I wonder who leads the league in free throw attempts per game out of all playoff players. And you're like, oh, it's Joel Embiid by far. And then you're like, I wonder who's second. And you're like, oh, it's Jalen Brunson by a good margin. It's like, maybe you're both getting calls. Yeah. Maybe you're both getting a lot of calls. Maybe you're both getting the line literally the two most of anybody in the playoffs so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Fred, who do you have as the best offensive player? You said you have somebody that's above Embiid. Who you got?
Yeah, not to relitigate the always popular 2023 MVP conversation, but like, it's Nikola Jokic.
Yeah,
I just don't really think there's much of a. It's like, yeah, I don't know what the conversation is. I was thinking about this the other day. When they had their comeback against the Lakers in game two. And I'm not sure there is a player in NBA history where if you said to me, you don't know the context, you don't know any of the defenders, you don't know the coach you're playing against, you don't know any of the players you're playing against, and you don't know any of the players you're playing with.
Mm-hmm.
However, you have to bet your life on your team creating a good shot. It doesn't matter if the shot goes in. It doesn't matter if somebody makes a ridiculously tough shot. You have to create a good shot. If you create a good shot, you can survive.
Yeah.
And if you don't create a good shot, you can't survive. And you can have one pick at who you want on your team. You can pick one guy from NBA history. I think it might be Nikola Jokic.
From NBA history?
It's just... I don't know who else. LeBron is up there.
I was going to say, like younger LeBron would be up there for sure.
Bird is up there. Magic can do it as a passer, but he's not necessarily the scorer.
Yeah.
Jordan is not on that list of just like creating a good shot. He'll make ridiculously tough shots.
Really tough shots. Same with Kobe.
Kobe's not on that list.
Yeah.
Like Tim Duncan's not on that list.
No.
If we go through just like the greatest offensive engines between Jokic's passing, his post game, his shooting, his strength, and his height, where he's able to make passes that most people in the history of the game are just completely and utterly like not just mentally incapable of making, but physically incapable of making.
Yeah.
Like it's not Chris Paul because he's too small. He's not going to make a cross court pass that Nikola Jokic can make. I'm just watching that. And it's like the dude is dominating down low. Mm-hmm. He's dominating in the high post every single time. He's creating a good shot every time. And they just have a perfect crunch time offense because of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's nothing you can do about this.
No, there's this calm confidence about him when you watch him where he is just absolutely, he's dominant. There's no panic. There's no moment that's like too big for him. Like you could just zero in on his face. And you couldn't tell if this was quarter two of game five of a season or if this is game seven of the NBA finals. Like you just wouldn't know because that's just the way that he plays. And the Nuggets And he said it after the game, like, they just have this winning culture that just kind of permeates the whole team, and it starts with him. Yeah, he's good.
What was the quote? Winning is our lifestyle.
Winning is our lifestyle.
Sounds like a DJ Khaled lyric.
It's a pretty good bar. That's a pretty good bar. Okay. Shout out to Pascal Siakam too, who's been really, really good.
Oh yeah, he's been awesome. He's been great.
Yeah, but probably not as good as those other two.
Pascal C. Awesome is what he's been.
We got to move on to best defender now. Okay, best defender in the playoffs so far. Who do you got, Fred Katz?
Okay, so we're talking Wolves later on the show.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Rudy Gobert has been really phenomenal.
Yeah.
That whole Wolves team defensively has been great. McDaniel's been great. I think Anthony Edwards has been great. But because we're talking about the Wolves later, and I don't think Rudy Gobert is a particularly interesting answer.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I guess you could say he is interesting, because Rudy Gobert gets killed for being apparently unplayable in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's stayed on the court, which I think is a big deal for him and for the Wolves.
You know what? I'll say Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, I think it's okay.
I'll say Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
Not just stayed on the court. I do think it's somewhat overplayed that Rudy Gobert gets played off the court.
Sure.
Very rarely he actually gets played off the court in the playoffs. It doesn't really happen. There have been a number of possessions where he's been switched onto the perimeter in this series and has done a really good job there. The Suns, I mean, you talk about strong offensive ratings. I don't have it up in front of me, but the Suns are not scoring. They're just not scoring. And the problem is they're not getting to spots where they should be roasting.
Yeah.
You know, the question about this series was, would the Suns be a bad matchup for Minnesota because Gobert is at his best when he's out around the rim and the Suns are so good in the mid range. And it's honestly the exact conversation we have about the Suns every year where it's, oh, the Suns are designed to kill you in the mid range. And Gobert has been so good getting out onto shooters, not playing too deep of a drop, still being able to affect guys around the rim. I think he's been great in passing lanes. I think he's been fantastic. And there are a couple other guys I think you can go with at this. I think Dort has been really good with OKC.
Yeah.
I think Jonathan Isaac has had really good moments with Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jared Allen is having a great series for Cleveland.
Yeah. The wing defenders for Minnesota too. I think Nikhil Alexander Walker's having he's had a ridiculous season, but he's been really, really good off the bench.
He's been great
for the Wolves.
He's been great, and he might be somebody we discuss in another category.
Yeah, Suns
a little bit later.
98.9 offensive rating so far through two games. 117.
That's a disaster.
117 defensive rating. It is bad. It is really bad. Worst net rating in the playoffs. It's obviously small sample, but this is not the regular season matchup that we saw between the Wolves and the Suns. They have flipped it in a significant way, which is funny just because we saw that last regular season matchup, and I think everybody just thought, oh, it's curtains for the Wolves, you know. I'm gonna say Lugans Dort for best defender, and it's just because I've seen him up close be an absolute maniac to Brandon Ingram. Like, Brandon Ingram has no space. He's almost like taking away his confidence on the court. B.I. took two shots in the first half of that last game, of game two, because Lu Dort's in his face. Lu Dort, he contested Brandon Ingram with two hands. I don't know if you saw that possession where he like ran up to him and contested him with both hands, which you wrote a really great piece on Lu Dort's defense a few weeks ago. And he just does weird stuff to try to throw guys off, and like that was one thing that he was doing. He fights, and a lot of teams can't do this because they don't have guys that are willing to do it or even able to do it. But the Thunder don't switch very much. They do deploy switching lineups at times, but they don't switch very much because they have Lu Dort, and that he will fight over every screen and fight through every situation to stick to a guy. And I know even Thunder fans and people have been asking me, like, well, why aren't they doing that to Shea? Like, most teams don't have guys that can do that. Like, that shows, like, how special Lou is as a defender. And I think it just it bodes well for the Thunder in that he's not only defending well, but he's shooting the basketball well from three. He's making good decisions. I think Lou has been one of the better defenders in the playoffs so far.
Yeah, it's a really good one. He's been great. I love the quirky Lu Dort closeouts.
Yeah.
He has the weirdest, closeouts in the NBA, and it's extremely intentional.
Yeah.
He will just legitimately, he'll just try to weird you out. He'll try to have somebody say, "What the hell was that?" And it just throws you off. That is his strategy on so much of this stuff.
He does the two hands. He does like a windmill sweep through sometimes. He'll do like the offhand that you aren't expecting him to use. Like he's just all over the place. Mark Daniel sometimes, called him an artist.
Sometimes if you're trying to drive on him. You called him an artist. Yeah. Sometimes if you're trying to drive on him, he'll just randomly start high stepping.
Yeah.
Why are you high stepping? This is a football drill. And you're just not getting by him. He'll just high step. What are you doing?
He's an absolute maniac.
He just it reminds me of how, I forget who said this. There was a player who said that Ron Artest had the weirdest trash talk.
Yeah.
Where he would sometimes just like whisper really strange things into your ear. And I was like, that checks out.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I completely buy that. He's kind of the defensive equivalent of Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, trash talk.
Panda's friend.
Panda's friend. I don't know which one it is right now.
I don't know. Hope it's Panda's friend. Okay, let's move on to best.
Can I give one more defensive?
Yeah, give a shout out.
Kelly Oubre has been awesome.
Isn't that funny? He actually has been. He has been really good, and not just like in the playoffs, but for a while has been a legitimately good role player, which I just am not sure I was ever going to say. He felt like a player destined to be this, you know, good stats, bad team guy, where he's like in Charlotte scoring 20 points a game. No one sees him. He's making money because he's scoring points, but he's become a good, I mean, I don't know who to credit this. I don't know if it's like Nick Nurse or obviously Oubre deserves a lot of credit himself, but he's turned into one of their best perimeter defenders, if not like their best perimeter defender. It feels very strange.
He's done an incredible job on Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
And part of that is Nick Nurse has had a really, really smart game plan on Brunson, who really struggled for the first two games of the series.
Yeah.
And Oubre is really good at using his length, and he's been really good at defending Brunson when he trails behind him on pick and rolls, on drives, just basically taking away the step back, contesting shots from behind. He's been really, really good in that series. Deserves a shout out.
Yeah.
Should be in the conversation.
I don't think Knicks fans had that on their bingo card to watch out for Kelly Oubre's defense, but he has been that good for sure. Let's talk about best role players. I don't think that you can have this conversation without talking about Josh Hart, who I think has been the best role player. And I mean, obviously like the scoring and the rebounding as like a, I mean, how tall do you think he is? He's listed at 6'4". Do you think he really is 6'4"?
Yeah, I think he's 6'4".
Okay. It's crazy because I mean, he's basically a power forward, like a 6'4 power forward. Like he's in a lot of ways, he reminds me of like a modern day like Andre Iguodala, who's just kind of does everything for your team. But he scored 20 or more points in all three games. He had 21 and 15 in game two. Hit some massive shots. He's hitting his threes. I mean, he's over 50% from three. He's been outrageously important to the Knicks, who just, they need a scoring lift. For sure, and he's been that for them. He's been outrageous, and that trade too, which at the time I don't think everybody thought it was a great trade for the Knicks, and it's been a outrageously good trade. And I think it also speaks to, a lot of times when we talk about trading first round picks, sometimes we overrate that, especially if you're getting back a player like Josh Hart that can contribute like this on a nightly basis. Like, oh man, I don't know if Josh Hart's worth a first round pick. That pick became Keegan Murray's brother, okay? And he's been fine. But it's obviously something that I think we might even need to recalibrate in our brains a little bit, like the value of a first round pick, especially when trading for a player that you know is going to be in your top eight rotation, and in this case, like one of the three best players on the Knicks. Anyways, Josh Hart, to me, he's been the best role player.
Yeah, a starter on a 50-win team who never subs out of games.
Yeah.
He just went 8 consecutive quarters without subbing out of a game.
And it's maybe the best quote in the league. Ridiculous.
That's up there. That is definitely possible. I just wrote a feature on Tibbs for earlier this week in which he did not hold back.
You've got to go read this piece, by the way. I don't want to like say too much, but you have to go read this piece that Fred wrote about Tibbs. It is outrageously entertaining. And a lot of it is like credit to Josh Hart for just talking.
Just talking. Just almost honestly, it was the only interview where my only follow-ups were like, you should stop talking. Maybe you should stop answering me. Because he said some outrageous stuff in that one. He did.
Who you got? Best outrageous. Role player.
Yeah, I mean, number one, I had Josh Hart. He's hit 4 threes in each of the games in this series, which is completely and utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
And totally... just totally unexpected.
Yeah.
But you know who I'll say? I'm gonna say Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Okay. I think that's totally fair. Hart. Yeah.
I think he has been really good. They're what, +42 when he's on the court over these first two games.
It's like him and Naz Reid as a tandem are just ridiculous. If they're together, if they're separated, their powers actually dissipate a little bit. But when they're together, there's some magic there.
Right. One of them is Samson. The other one's Samson's hair. They're just...
I was thinking that exact same thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, it's a little inside baseball, that analogy, you know? It's a little too technical basketball stuff, but... He has been really good. And the thing with Nikhil Alexander Walker that I find so interesting is like this very solid defensive performance was not to be expected. Right? Like when he's wallowing away with previous franchises, like this is not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I get what you're saying now. I mean, for sure. This was not, I mean, how did this guy bounce around the league at all? Is like the question that I ask myself when watching him.
Yeah, but when you watched him like in Utah, he wasn't guarding and he wasn't playing with a team basketball. I think part of it has to do with like Chris Finch has this bench unit really gelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has their role players really gelling.
Mm-hmm.
Naz Reid, fresh off Sixth Man of the Year, mm-hmm. deserving Sixth Man of the Year, really gelling. Like they look very comfortable, and this whole team defense. You know, they really have a culture of if you don't guard, you don't play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because they have Rudy Gobert, and it's not just because they have Jaden McDaniels. Like, Anthony Edwards has really become a hell of a defensive player.
Yeah.
Mike Conley is going to set that tone with any organization that he's with. And I think they have really come together in that sense. He's been great, Alexander Walker. Mm-hmm. He's been awesome. He's hitting his threes. He's putting them up plentifully. They're killing the Suns when he's on the court, and the Suns' big three looks like not a big three.
Yeah,
can't think of anything clever. Not deserving of anything clever, honestly.
No,
just not a big three.
Yeah. Shout out Derek White. Shout out PJ Washington. Shout out Aaron Gordon. He's like on the fringe of a role player, but he's a role player, yes?
I guess. I didn't really consider Aaron Gordon because I thought he was just too good.
Yeah, he's like he's in the middle. He's like in between like the all-star and role player. What we need to come up with a name for that zone, right?
He's the guy who could decide to carry a burden on another team and has decided. You know what we call it? We call it the Iguodala zone.
Yeah. It's
the Iguodala zone.
Yes. He is firmly in the Andre Iguodala zone. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I wouldn't have referred to. I mean, I guess he's a role player. I guess he's a role player. But I was thinking more.
If you win finals MVP, are you a role player? You know? I don't know.
Yeah, that's where I'm like, that's exactly why it's the Andre Iguodala zone.
Yeah.
It's the Iguodala zone.
Welcome to the Iguodala zone.
It's a good term.
Yeah. Okay, most disappointing player.
I'm taking three players.
Okay.
Most disappointing player.
Okay.
I'm taking Kevin Durant, I'm taking Devin Booker, and I'm taking Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I've got Booker as my number one, but yeah.
I'm just taking them all together. I mean, Booker is missing shots like crazy.
37% from the field. From the field for Booker. What's happened? Like, what's crazy going on there? It is strange.
It is strange. What do you make of it?
I just think the fit is not great. They don't have anybody that gets downhill. They don't have anybody that creates anything easy for the three of them. And with Grayson Allen out too, I mean that's a problem. You have like a very much a lack of depth. I just think that they need, and a lot of people like they need somebody to organize them. Yes, but more than that, they need somebody that like can like break down a defense that isn't just like in a mid-range dribble jumper. Because I just think part of their biggest problem is like they don't get to the hoop enough. And you need to have players do that. They don't have a variety because all three of those guys like to occupy the same amount of space. And when they're not occupying that space, they're just sitting in the corner. So there's just like not enough movement for them, and there's not somebody who just can shatter a defense and get to the hoop. To me, that was like the problem with the roster construction from the beginning to me. And I think it's just like the depth issue and then the issue of not getting to the rim are the two things that are hurting the Suns the most.
All right. I have a trivia question for you.
Okay.
Since you're going to embarrass me with trivia in a few minutes. Yep. I don't even know what we're doing trivia on today. So this is going to be a horrible experience.
I have one for you. Yeah.
How many shots in the restricted area have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker combined to make over the first two games of this series?
Ooh, I like this. Four. I don't know.
You're too high. Three.
Seriously.
Kevin Durant has made one out of five shots in the restricted area. Devin Booker. Oh, nope. You know what? I take it back. I can't do math. It's four. You're correct.
Yes.
My sentiment remains the same.
I can't do math. You can't do like.
It's almost three plus one.
It's barely math.
Three plus one. You kidding me? That's actually when you have a plus one, it's not even math. It's just counting.
Yeah. That's something that my son who is in pre-K would nail it. I promise you.
What comes after three? What's after three again?
What else do you have to add to the Phoenix mess before I give you my most disappointing player?
They are such a degree of lost in the fray.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that when I kind of believed in this team at the beginning of the season, one of the reasons that I did was because I thought, you know what? Okay. They don't have like a conventional point guard, but Booker is a really underrated facilitator.
Yeah.
I always thought Beal was an underrated pick and roll player. And it's not like Kevin Durant doesn't pass the ball. And you look at how like someone like Beal played basically before it was like, this is his Washington Wizards team and he's got to drop 30 every night. And he was this vicious off ball player. And you still see Beal run around pin downs and you still see him free himself off the ball. You see Booker free himself off the ball and Durant free himself off the ball. But their actions, even to this point, are not necessarily enhancing the others. Like, you don't really see Kevin Durant setting pin downs for Bradley Beal and putting the defense into a scramble. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Minnesota has had a much easier job being able to shut them down like that. And for what it's worth, the guy who I took as best defensive player, part of the reason why is because of stuff like this.
Yeah.
Where Durant and Devin Booker have combined for either three or four, depending on how you do your math, have combined for either three or four makes in the restricted area all series.
Yeah.
And that is just number one.
Three or four.
McDaniels has been so good defensively. I think he's been really hard to get by.
Yeah,
McDaniels he's really good, really good against screens.
Yeah.
Oh, he's been.
Yeah.
I think him and Rudy Gobert is maybe the most devastating defensive pick and roll combination in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Part of that is when you get to the basket, Rudy Gobert is there waiting for you, and he's been devastating.
Yeah.
But, man, you gotta find another way. You can't be scoring 98 points per 100 possessions in a playoff series when you're built to score. You're not built to shut teams down. You are built to score.
Yeah. And we've seen them do it in the past. It's not like this is their first time in the playoffs. We've seen these guys do it at a very high level. My most disappointing player is Jrue Holiday. Just been a non-factor as an offensive player. He's playing 37 minutes for this Boston team against Miami. They lose by 10. He's inefficient. He's not making his threes. This is part of the reason that the Bucks ended up moving on from him and trading him, is that he can just come up as a almost offensive zero at times. And I think it's a problem. Now, it shouldn't really be something that truly hinders Boston, because they have enough other guys to go to. They just need everybody. They need other guys to be on, and he can kind of fill his smaller role. But when he's playing 37 minutes, he's taking 12 shots. Like, that's not nothing. Like, you just can't shoot 33% from the field in the game. I mean, it's just a miserable performance for Jrue Holiday so far, who I expect to bounce back. This is somebody who's been through it. He's a champion, but he's been pretty brutal so far. Someone who's not brutal at all, Minnesota Timberwolves. We're going to talk about them right after this quick break. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training, just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. All right, it's time to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, and here to talk about them is Dane Moore of the Dane Moore NBA Podcast. Dane, what's up, man?
What's up? Let's do it. Let's get into it. Game 3 tonight.
Yeah. Game 3 is tonight. We're recording this Friday morning. The Timberwolves have been amazing, and a lot of it is Anthony Edwards, who he averaged only 14-6-3, shooting 31% against the Suns in the three games in the regular season. These first couple games, he's 24-7-7, 47% from the field. What in the world has changed with Anthony Edwards?
Nothing, man. They're guarding him. Like, he's getting off the ball. That's what it is. Like, I mean, those numbers are juiced up by Game 1 a little bit. But, like, the biggest thing in this series, and we knew kind of, like, coming in from the three regular season games where they shut Ant down, is, like, they did, like, the Giannis wall thing
yeah.
for Ant. I mean, it's they're up in the ball, and then they're like super intentional about gap help on the right side and the left side. And like, you know, Ant 22, he like sometimes pushes himself to go through help and, you know, just too many bodies there, and he gets some turnover problems. I think in game 82, he had like 8 or 9 turnovers, and the Wolves had 19 turnovers in the first half of that game. And so much of it was about like, you know, how are the Wolves going to play offense because they need Ant. I think just like Ant deserves a lot of credit for passing as much as he has this whole time. And, you know, there's that temptation, particularly against like a Kevin Durant or whatever, Booker, to want to go and get your 30, 35, whatever. But like Finch just got through to him and was like, do not go in there. Do not go in there and turn the ball over. And he's been getting off of it. And then if at times somebody else gets rolling a little bit, then okay, now Ant can like attack a second side or get out and transition a little bit more. But he's not driving into crowds. That's the biggest thing.
So Cat too. So against the Suns, he put up 17 on 12 shots during the regular season. And through two games, he's now putting up 15 on only 8 shots. What are your thoughts so far on his role in the offense and how he's handled that?
Well, he to me, Fred, is so big about like breaking that. Like you shouldn't be able to be loaded in both gaps if Cat's a pass away, right? Like, you know, and they just weren't doing that in the regular season. Like Cat just standing there should make it so if Grayson Allen or whoever's guarding him can't be in there to help on Ant. So he kind of helps break that. And in the first game, they did that by they were giving it to him in the post, you know. And so now, like, they tried to guard him one-on-one with KD there, and he could kind of go through that. If it was somebody else, then they'd have to bring the double, right? Now you got the double, swing, and now Ant can attack, you know, a shifted defense or Jaden or Mike or whatever from the other side. So he was big in game one for that offensively. They started fronting everything. He really didn't do, like, for him in the post, he really didn't do anything offensively in game two. But for him, it's just kind of like surviving in this series, right? Like, don't get completely roasted by KD and try to help the offense a little bit. Try to open things up for Ant. And obviously, he's still coming back from missing 6 weeks or whatever. Like, he played game 81, game 82, game one, and game two. Like, that's, he's not all the way back yet either, but he's just got to be out there to almost be a decoy to attract some attention off of Ant so that Ant can kind of go do his thing. And that's, again, in the first game, Cat did that. And Ant had, 33 or whatever it was that he had. So he's big in loosening things up for Ant, even more than like individually scoring himself.
What surprised you about the rotation so far? Essentially, no Kyle Anderson. You've had a little sprinkle of Monte Morris as the eighth guy. How do you think this changes in this series and then maybe evolves as in like different matchups if the Wolves move on?
Well, I mean, the whole story here is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Yeah. I mean, and this isn't new, man. He was doing this last year too, like in the play-in playoffs. He's one of the best perimeter defenders.
He was great on Shea in that play-in game, which I think was a surprise.
Great on Shea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then against Murray in round one last year, like he's just like Fred, he'd be a Tibbs guy. For sure. Tibbs guy. But like to the rotation thing, like they need to play a lot of times with four wings and one big rather than two bigs, right? In this matchup. So Nickeil kind of unlocks that. They've done a lot of like Conley, Nickeil, McDaniels, Edwards lineups. And with the Edwards, McDaniels, Alexander Walker lineups have like a net rating of plus 60 in these first three games. So that just really works for this series. So you boost Nickeil up to like 30 minutes a game and all the starters are playing a little bit more. Like nobody else can really play on the bench. Kyle Anderson's been hurt, but like, I'm not even sure he'll play even if he's healthy, you know, just because everybody else is playing more. And like Nickeil's played 30 both games, but Nas has only played like 18 and 16, I think, in the two games. And Cat's minutes are down because they're trying to not play Cat that much either. So you're just kind of reminded in the playoffs of like, oh yeah, everybody plays more and you can really only lean on one bench guy. Like you might play eight, but you can really only lean on one. So that's been the biggest like differentiator is like Nickeil, 30 minutes a night, be awesome, allow us to not have to play Cat all the time. And yeah, just kind of inspire those mixed lineup groups.
We got to talk about Rudy Gobert. So Andrew and I were just talking about this earlier, about how Gobert is
getting choked up. Fred's just about to be moved to tears about Gobert.
I'm getting emotional. about this guy who supposedly gets played off the floor every year in the playoffs, who I've basically never seen get played off the floor. There is no greater example of people not knowing what getting played off the floor is than when people talk about Rudy Gobert getting played off the floor. It's very easy to notice when someone gets played off the floor. You know how you notice it? They're off the floor. It's very easy. All you have to do is look at the floor. And if they're not on the floor, they might have been played off the floor. But if they're on the floor, they were not played off the floor. And he is not being played off the floor in this series. So he's playing big minutes. He's doing a great job defending the rim. He's doing a great job defending away from the rim. He's been great in the offensive role that he plays. Like, what is your evaluation of what's working for him so well right now in this series?
Well, like, the biggest thing to that, like, narrative, and to the extent that it was true that, like, Utah couldn't rely on him, was offensively, right? Like, that was the issue when Dallas or the Clippers went five out small. It was like Rudy wasn't doing anything offensively. So, and then he's just kind of out as a perimeter defender, which he's fine at, to your point. Like, he is a good perimeter defender, actually. But, like, he loses his value at the rim, and if he's not doing anything on offense, like, that's why he was somewhat, like, neutralized, or he just wasn't as big of a weapon in those other series. But man, like, the biggest story of, and the reason why this team won 56 games this year, is like the trust that the teammates have in Rudy and that Rudy has in his teammates. And I think what we're seeing in this series is Rudy having trust in his teammates, because you got to come out and play on the perimeter, or you're up to touch every single screen, whatever, like, because it's Booker, Beal, KD, like, the five needs to play out there. And Rudy's been up, willingly switching consistently. And I don't think Rudy did that in Utah because he didn't have the trust behind him. Like, the rim is his sacred space, you know. It's like, I care about that more than anything. And it's not that back then he couldn't go guard in the perimeter. He was just like, nobody's going to have my back here at the rim. And now if you got Rudy, like, switched out in the perimeter, you got Jaden McDaniels rotating under as, like, the low man. Cat down there is another big body. Like, the Wolves can just afford to take Rudy away from the rim. And Rudy got that, you know. And he's like, okay, yep, I can switch on to KD here. I can switch on to Booker here. No, I'm not going to do it every single possession, but I don't know, man. It's just like, I've been just, like, tweeting out clips all year of, like, oh, there's another Rudy defending LaMelo Ball in isolation, or this guy in isolation. I mean, it is just, it's like, consistently he's good at it. And he's got 100 clips, like, go to Synergy or whatever. He's got 100 clips of just, like, switched onto a guard and he's fine. Like, he's fine in that situation. It's just about, is the rim okay behind him? And in this context of this Wolves team, like, it is. Like, they got other guys.
Yeah, the other guy's Jaden McDaniels, who was ridiculous in game two, 25-8-3. He's obviously such an important defender for them, like, their best point of attack guy, the guy who's going to guard the best perimeter player on the other team. But offensively, where have you seen his improvements? Because it wasn't just, like, standstill threes from Jaden in game two. He had a lot going on.
Well, I think the biggest thing that we saw was offensive rebounding, like, just attacking. You know, he's playing out of the corner a lot, right? And he's corner crashing in this series. He has 7 offensive rebounds, and he's, like, not an offensive rebounding guy. I think he had, like, 50 offensive rebounds, like, the whole season. And that is just, like, it's making him a weapon in the corner all the time, because he's not, like, a knockdown guy, you know? And so he's been plenty of, like, 1-for-7 games and stuff like that. He's finding ways to, out of the corner, be impactful other than just shooting, you know, attacking, cutting more, all of those things. He's better at that offensively than he is just being a spot up guy. And I think they're doing a good job of weaponizing Jaden when he's the guy that Phoenix is clearly most willing to be like, all right, like, don't care about him. We got to focus on these other guys. And Jaden's punishing that offensive rebounding, getting to the middle of the floor. I mean, he's like 6'11". Like he kind of can do that. Like he gets in the middle there, can shoot over everybody. Like I don't think people realize like he's just as tall as Cat. Like he's huge. So he's just like, he's a big body weapon. Obviously we talk about that defensively all the time, but yeah, like he's got more in that offensive bag. It's going to be interesting just over his career to kind of see how that evolves, but he's just doing it in a very role player way. Attacking the glass, making some threes, getting to the middle of the floor. Like he's a competitive kid, man. That so doesn't really surprise me.
Well, Dane, thank you so much for answering all of our questions, but it's now time to play Fred versus a Friend, our weekly game show where Fred goes head-to-head with a friend. This time, it's Dane Moore from the Dane Moore NBA podcast. You get 2 points for every question that you answer correctly. You get one for questions that you steal. Here we go. Let's get going, guys. Dane, first question is for you. The last Timberwolves team to advance past round one was the 03-04 Timberwolves. No player on that team finished with 100 made threes. And we're going to try to name the top five players in made threes that season. We'll go back and forth until one of you goofs. Dane, we'll start with you.
Fred Hoiberg.
Fred Hoiberg, 76 made threes. He's number two.
All right. Oh, I probably should have saved that one.
I actually, you know what? I would have gotten Hoiberg. That was, for some reason, the first name I thought, too. Sam Cassell.
Sam Cassell is number three, 74 made threes.
Trenton Hassel?
Trenton Hassel is incorrect, Dane.
Oh, shit.
Number one, Latrell Sprewell.
Wait, can I?
Made 99.
I was going to say Sprewell.
You got any others?
That was the year before.
I lose this trivia every time, man.
That was the year before Sprewell's feeding the family.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys can name the last two, I'll be very impressed. There was only 31 made threes and 20 made threes. One of them is a shooter who just missed a lot of time that year.
Wally Zerbiak?
Wally Zerbiak was number five. He made 20 threes that season. And then one other
20,
guy.
Dude. That is crazy.
Isn't that bizarre?
That's so few. Yeah. Like, I mean, just.
It's bizarre.
The game's changed.
Troy Hudson.
You said Sam Cassell?
Yeah, Sam Cassell. And then Troy Hudson was number four. Made 31 threes on the season. So, all right, Fred, your question is this. The team that the Wolves beat to get out of round one in 2004 was the Denver Nuggets. Can you name the Nuggets' leading scorer in the playoffs?
The 04 Nuggets? Who is their leading scorer in the playoffs? I'm going to guess Carmelo Anthony.
That is incorrect, Fred.
Yeah. Mm. I would have guessed that too, but that sounded a little trick question-y.
It's very trick question-y. That's why I put this in here. It is tricky.
There's like a lot of different iterations of those Carmelo teams. That's really early. Now I'm trying to think of like something weird. Was it like, was Jameer Nelson the point guard on that team? Like what was that? Because Kenyon Martin and stuff, they came later. Like, I don't even think I know who was on that team then.
It is a weird team. You got any guesses?
I mean, I guess I'll say Kenyon Martin. I can't even think of anything.
Kenyon Martin is incorrect. It is actually
not on the team.
I need to look and see if he was on the team. Vashawn Leonard. What averaged
Leonard
17 points per game in that series.
Vashawn Leonard is a drop.
It's a drop.
For a leading scorer, too.
Leading scorer for the Nuggets in that series.
Team that made the playoffs.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
Who's the worst leading scorer on a playoff team this season? Like, in one of these 16
Ooh, that's a good
teams?
Question.
It's still Vashawn Leonard.
Believe it or not.
No, these 16 teams right now.
Who would be the worst guy? What's the worst? Okay, well, so what's the worst team right now that's in the playoffs? Because I think that, the team that has like the youngest leader. Well, I don't even know. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's crazy. They're all good. It's like Embiid is on a seventh seed, you know?
Yeah.
LeBron.
Paolo Banchero. I don't know. Like it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. The answer is Paolo Banchero. That's
yeah, and he's awesome. Yeah. It takes a lot to get to the Vashon Leonard zone, for sure.
We're a ways away from there. We're a ways away.
Okay, Fred, next question. In 2018, the Timberwolves lost to the Rockets in 5 games in the first round. In those 5 games, Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins scored the exact same amount of points, which just blew my mind. We're going to try to guess just how many points that was. Now, I'll either let you guess the number or let Dane guess the number, and then the other person will guess higher or lower. If you happen to guess the exact number, you get a bonus point. Fred, would you like to guess, or do you want Dane to guess?
You know what? I am not. I'm a risk taker.
Okay.
So I think
you also took a big risk earlier in this pod when you tried to add 3 and 1 together, and you know.
And it didn't go well.
It didn't work out too well. So watch out.
I got 3. I came to the conclusion it was 3. Didn't turn out to be correct. It wasn't a trick question. The answer really was 4. I struggled for a moment, but I got there.
It's hard.
I am going to say that they scored.
Total points, by the way. Total points.
Yep. I'm going to guess that they scored 98 points.
Okay. Dane, higher or lower than
98? One for each degree they emanated.
I mean, so Jimmy was coming off of the meniscus that season.
Correct.
He kind of did the same thing Kat did, and he did not play well in that Phoenix series. I'm going to say less than 93. My number was going to be 85
is definitely closer. The number is 79 total points.
Wow.
That they scored. They both scored 79 points, both at 15.8 points per game. Point goes to Dane. The score is now 1-1.
That was a big Derrick Rose and Jeff Teague series. Ooh, for the Wolves.
That's a brutal
getting
series.
Close to Vashon Leonard territory.
Yeah, they were getting close to the Vashon Leonard line there. Okay, Dane, you may actually let's go to this one. On July 31st, 2007, Kevin Garnett was traded to the Celtics for Al Jefferson, Ryan Gomes, Sebastian Telfair, Gerald Green, Theo Ratliff, Cash, and Boston's 2009 first rounder that became this player.
Johnny Flynn?
It's not Johnny Flynn, Fred.
Okay, so 2009, they took Rubio 5, they took Flynn 6.
Yeah, they had another pick later in this.
Could it be the Ty Lawson pick? Could it be Ty Lawson?
I think so.
Did they trade it to Denver?
That is incorrect. It was the Celtics late pick. Wayne Ellington.
Oh,
yep.
They took so many guards that year. It's impossible.
Took so
they
many
had four
guards.
First round picks.
Yeah.
That was David Kahn, who was just traded back.
And then they took Nick Kalathis in the second round.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Shout out to David Kahn. You know, it's been a while since we've had a GM like David Kahn out there. It's pretty wild.
Thank God.
Fred.
It's a disaster.
Still tied 1-1. Fred, here's your question. Naz Reid, winner of the Sixth Man of the Year award, has 2 nicknames on Basketball Reference, and I'm going to give you 3, and you have to tell me which is the fake. 1. 2 words. Big Jelly or Nasty?
Wait, Big Jelly, Nasty, and what?
2 words.
It's like, quote, 2 words.
Two words.
Like, the nickname is 2 words.
Oh.
2 words. Got it. Big Jelly.
Because I was going to be like, that's 3 words. Now who can? Yeah. Big Jelly, Nasty is 3 words. It's definitely 2 words. Nas Reed's kind of he's got like a quirky fan base. I feel like somebody would have nicknamed him Big Jelly. After like that really good donut shop in the mall right next to the arena. Just Big Jelly.
Yeah, you know what? Yes.
Forget the name of that donut place. What's it called?
Cardigans, I'm pretty sure.
Cardigans. Oh, that place is awesome.
Fred, if you don't know, Fred is a huge lover of donuts. In fact, he got wind that a donut shop in Oklahoma City was shutting down and ordered two dozen donuts to be shipped from our buddy Royce Young's wife, Carrie Young. Shout out to Carrie. Shipped Fred two dozen donuts that she individually saran wrapped and shipped to Fred. Wow. That cost him an amount of money that we probably shouldn't even say on this podcast, but the guy knows donuts, and you also know nicknames.
You have like one of them frozen and saved.
Oh,
like,
that's a good question.
Like a wedding cake.
Oh yeah, this is the wedding cake that situation. You probably should.
Having 20 years.
You probably should. Right.
I think Nasty is not his nickname.
Yeah, you're right. Nasty is not a nickname for Naz Reid. That is correct. Fred, you now lead
Jelly Fam, 3-1. Jelly Fam, New York. That's Naz was Jelly Fam. That's where Big Jelly comes from. Yeah.
All right. Here's our last question. Dane, if you get this correct, you win the week. Between 2008 and 2016, the Wolves picked in the top five six times, and we're going to try to name all of those players. We'll go back and forth until one of you goofs. We'll start with you, Dane.
So these are first-round picks or top 10 picks?
Top five picks from 2008 to 2016.
I'll start with Derek Williams.
Derek Williams is correct from 2011.
I'll go Ricky Rubio.
Ricky Rubio from 2009.
Wesley Johnson.
Wes Johnson from the 2010 draft.
I should have saved that one. Damn it.
No, I'd have gotten Wes Johnson. Wes Johnson and I might be the only, at the time that it happened, we were convinced that it was the only time where a former manager and player from college, because I was a manager at Syracuse and he was a player.
Oh, yeah.
Turned into a player beat writer when he played for the Wizards, and I covered the Wizards. But then Dave McMenamin, ironically, also with Syracuse, covered Carmelo with the Lakers when he was a manager on the 04 championship team. So McMenamin really got it. Okay. To 16. So Anthony Edwards is not in play here.
Nope.
I don't know. I'm out.
You're out?
I'm out. I'm out.
Dane, you
have Carl Anthony Towns.
I mean, Carl Anthony Towns.
Oh, Carl Anthony Towns. Yeah, he's a good player. I don't know how to count though. To me, like one is
Fred. I can't believe you just like you just bowed out and gave Dane Moore the win. Chris Dunn was top five in 2016, and then in 2008, who was the pick in 2008 for the Wolves? Double double machine. UCLA.
Oh, Kevin Love.
Kevin Love. Yeah, Kevin Love. That's right. Dane, you are the winner of Fred versus a friend. This is your day.
I've never won before, and wow. It's always Wolves-specific trivia, which is actually very embarrassing.
Wow, Fred just gave
up. I'll take it.
Fred just gave up, just like the Phoenix Suns. Hey, go listen to the Dane Moore NBA podcast. It's a great show. It's one where, I don't know if you heard this, Dane, we were giving out awards a few weeks ago. And we're giving out awards to like the best like beat writer or podcast. And Alex and I gave it to you because your show.
I did. My buddy sent it to me. He said, go to the whatever 25-minute mark. Thank you for that. It's been a fun year, man. Covered this team for a while that has not been good. You know, and you can't control that, right, Fred? Like you can't control what. What the team you're covering is doing, but it's a nice reward when, particularly when you're not expecting it, right?
Yeah, you know, for sure. Like,
it's been a fun year.
Yeah, go check.
And you gave John a shout out too. John's
John Case.
John's the dude. John Krasinski.
Yeah.
An actual beat writer. I just sit here and talk.
I can relate to that. Go check out Dane's podcast. Please get Britt Robson a mic. And we will talk to you again sometime soon.
He has a mic, dude. He does? He can't keep it. He moves. It's like, you know. It's just, it's, you know, he's my dad's age.
Yeah.
So we're lucky we got him
he's
on
so good,
StreamYard
though.
In the first place.
He's so good, though. Dane, thanks so much, man.
Yes, thanks, guys. Nice to see you.
Thanks again to Dane Moore for coming on the show. If you will go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, we will read it on the show. This one comes from Arcane Jackalope in the US of A. 5 stars, slam and jam. Slam and Jam is the absolute best. I get so tired of other podcasts who spend months asking, sure, but can blank team do it in the playoffs? How boring! Slam and Jam, on the other hand, shows why the regular season is interesting. Each week, they highlight interesting storylines and questions for each and every team that make the regular season matter. More generally, I enjoy the Athletic Podcast Network. Honorable mention goes to Tampering. And it made my week to hear Fred Katz on Slam and Jam this week. Andrew, I think you produce Basket Butts. Please tell Zach Harper and Jay King to be nicer to each other. I will be sure to relay the message. Thanks so much for that review, and thank you so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend and the basketball, and we will talk to you guys again next Friday.